Blog Talk Radio. And that was Bill Protzman with Anthem, and you are listening to Continue Mission. And tonight on Continue Mission, it's going to be Rich Kilblaine and I. We're going to be discussing some veterans issues, a little bit about politics, and we're going to go into the Ukraine situation. So it's kind of an open mic night tonight. But there are a couple things that we're going to hit pretty hard. And I'm just going to go ahead and bring Rich on right now. Usually I go into this monologue and stuff, but you know, I think it's definitely him and I have been speaking all during the week about some of these issues. And so Rich, what I wanted to do is number one, say, you're on the air and ask how your week's been going.
I just finished my second week of teaching high school history, and you know, it's not what I'm trained for, but it's been rewarding. I mentioned it, I think, last week. It's a private school. It's a Christian school. The kids want to learn, basically, when they called me in, I mean, the regular teacher, he got sick. It was very sudden. So all they could do with me is just, here's where he left off, pick up and start teaching. And I like that. You know, I think everybody's kind of surprised, like, you know, because usually when you sub, they have to write out everything for you. And I'm like, no, I like those marching orders. You know, when I realized it's all up to me. Actually, the mistake I made was the pace. And I'm trying to get through like a chapter a week or whatever. And there's one textbook, it's so thick that, you know, on Monday I said, okay, guys, I'm asking the students, I said, how long does it take your teacher to get through a chapter? They're like, two or three weeks. I'm like, what? And I'm like, I thought going through one chapter a week was too slow. I realized, and I had no free time. And so I realized I was going way too fast. So I've slowed it down, so it's a lot more fun for all of us, and that gives me a lot more free time. And then today, I had to write up all the tests and issued them today and graded the papers, and that's an evaluation of, you know, how much they care and also how well I'm teaching, all right? So anyway, teaching has its own rewards. I always enjoy doing it, and it looks like I'm probably going to he's not recovering for a couple more weeks. So this may go on for a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the good thing is that it sounds like you've got a good group of kids in there. You know, it's
a lot better
like
than public schools. A lot. Now, I'll tell you. No, I'm not slamming the students in the public school.
Yeah.
There's, like I said, when I was a sub back in Oklahoma, and I went through all those schools, we had an average of 23 kids per class.
Mm-hmm.
And on average, there was 3 kids in each class that didn't need to be there. Okay. Those 3 kids? Because like I said, there's 3 kids in there trying to pull everybody else down to their level.
Yeah.
They don't care about learning. And you got to get rid of them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we had lost discipline in the schools. And, in fact, I'll tell you this, struggling with it. I remember it's like, this isn't working. What's the problem? And the answer came to me in a dream. And you'll love this one. You know, I'm sitting there like, you know, there's no discipline. There were some teachers. Teaching is an art, guys. When it comes, all right, at the college level, which I prefer to teach, it's up to the students to extract the knowledge from the teacher. If you want to fail the class, that's your problem. Now, in high school, grade school, it's teaching. And you've got to motivate the students. You've got to figure out how they learn and all that. When you're in college, you're like, here's the knowledge, folks. You want it, I'm going to offer it to you, but if you want to flunk this course, I don't care. We're taking your money anyway. But
I've heard that by many college professors, by the way.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. Yeah,
yeah,
you know, we're not babysitting you. You're here. Yeah. You want to learn, you need to learn. And there's that transition. So, but I remember having this, you know, struggling with, you know, what would there was a total. Well, when I got off on the teachers, I said there was a really good teachers who had the kids motivated. I mean, I could walk in there, and even with a sub, they behave very well. And I'd go to the, you know, I got the, you know, because I filled in for everybody's class. I could tell who was good, who wasn't. And I'd go ask, like, the really good ones. I'm like, how'd you do it? And he said, you got to get control of them from the beginning. You do not cut them any slack. You got to tighten up on that discipline. But anyway,
It's training.
Yeah, it is. Well, they say the same thing about a command. When you're the leader, you got to go in and hit them strong, okay? You got to come off. You can't gradually move them into discipline. You have got to lay down the law. You got to draw the line, and anybody
that works
steps across it, you got to make an example of them.
Yeah.
I hate that.
I'm working
approach.
On that now.
Yeah, I hate that approach, but it works. But anyway, now I'm sitting there struggling with it, and then the answer came to me in a dream. And I remember walking into the next class, and the kids were acting up. And I said, you know what? He said, I was a company commander in the Army. Guys like you, for any of you who join the Army, you would be working for me.
Mm-hmm.
And you try to pull this crap off in my company, either myself or my NCOs will have you doing push-ups until we get tired of it, tired of watching you do them, okay? Now you can't do push-ups. You can't drop people for push-ups anymore. But the point being is we had
discipline
in the Army, and it hit me. That's what was lacking in the school. And the other thing I'd do is I'd walk into a classroom. If they started acting up, then I would tell them. And because also after that, I went to work in the business side because I could only handle two semesters of that before I had, no, this is broke. But I said, school is preparing you for one of two things, to go to college or go into the workforce. And the students needed to learn to treat their teachers as if they were their boss. And I said, if I'm your boss and I ask you a question that requires a yes or no answer and you give me some smart ass response, my response is going to be, there's the door, pick up your check on the way out. You're done. Okay? And problem is, parents look at school as babysitters who, by the way, are supposed to teach them something. But education is, the public education is broken. There are some good schools. I have been impressed by what I've seen in Virginia and what they've done, like, for example, because this is a large area. So we have a lot of schools, and what they did was they just bussed everybody around. And they go on, okay, if you want to follow this track, if you want to follow this track, if you want to follow this track, we're going to send you over to this high school. We'll send you to this high school. And then if you're, like, really smart, we're going to pull you out of the public. It's still public education at public schools. But we've got a governor's program over here. We're going to send all these smart – it's like sending them to a private school. Because it's just all these smart kids dumped in there. And I was impressed by what I've seen in Virginia. I was disappointed. You know, I was disappointed what I saw in Oklahoma, and it's not surprising that Oklahoma ranks like 49th out of 50 states, okay, thank God for Mississippi. Okay. That's a joke we had in that state. Otherwise, we'd be at the bottom. So, no, teaching has its rewards. I'm enjoying it. But for all you people out there who have a prayer list, add Mr. Brian Simpers to your list. Have him have a speedy recovery so I can get back to sleeping in late, reading in the morning, running 2 to 3 times a day instead of running at the end of coming back from work. Okay. All right. So anyway, that's my week.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's we've had some interesting weeks, that's for sure. I guess for me, we wanted to talk a little bit about some of the veterans issues. There were two issues, you know, that I sent over that, you know, that I'm dealing with the Purple Heart. And one of those has to do with an organization, with a company that is trademarked and wordmarked, trademarked the image of the medal of the Purple Heart, which I didn't even think that was legal, but obviously it is.
Yeah. I don't think it is. Has anyone really challenged it in a court? Because I read that letter, and they said it's been upheld by 2 court cases. I want to hear what the finding was. They may have had upheld the logo,
wordmark,
but not the other thing. Okay.
Yeah.
And the other thing you're going to mention?
The word mark. Yeah. But even that in itself, you know, I mean, I sent a letter to the Secretary of Defense and reached out to our congressional aides and they've really been no help. You know, I'm going to tell you, politicians are it's almost laughable, you know, as far as trying to get some assistance.
So let me tell you how it works, right? Because, you know, I don't remember anybody when I was a company commander threatened to write they were good soldiers. You know, I'm gonna write my congressman. But when I was a platoon leader, we heard that all the time. I'm gonna write my congressman. I said, go ahead. Because your congressman's not gonna read your letter. The aide's gonna read the letter. And they're gonna send us, with the congressman's letterhead or whatever, we're going to get a letter from a congressman, and it's not the congressman, it's the aide. Congressman will never see it. He didn't care. You know, unless you're like really important and big donor, he ain't going to pay attention. So his aide's going to answer that. They're going to send us a letter asking why Johnny or Jane is pulling extra duty. And we're going to say, because Johnny and Jane's all fucked up. And they're being punished for this, okay? And then they're going to take that answer and send it to the person who wrote that congressional query or whatever. They're just messengers.
They just
messages
answer them
back
out.
And forth between us, okay? They don't care. So really trying to get something fixed, you have to meet with the congressman.
Yeah,
you
that's what we're doing, yeah. Well, and in my position, I can do that fairly easy. I mean, I was on the phone with an aide that talks to the president every day, you know, brought
here's
this
the
thing
to
them.
Yeah. To an aide, you're still not talking to the congressman. But here's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
The image of the Purple Heart. All right.
Yeah.
All the stuff I wrote for the Army is public domain. Everything I've done is public domain. The books I've published, if anybody wants, and I've told the Vietnam vets, I said, guys, if you want to publish those things and sell them, you can. We had our museum foundation take the Convoy Ambush Case Studies Volume 1, print it and sell it. You know, I said, you can do it. It's legal to do that. You can make a profit off of this. It's public domain. Okay.
Right.
I told you those young producers, film producers, approached me about wanting to make a movie out of Lom Som. And they wanted the film rights. And I told them, I said, well, there's one problem. It's public domain. I can't give it to you. It's public domain.
Yeah.
You just take it. I can't even keep you from making it. And said, not only that, if you ask, I have to give you all my research. they spent 2 days down here. You know, I had like two CDs full of photographs and all kinds of stuff. I said, if you want, you ask for my research. Yeah, I wanted to give it, but I told him that's the law. I have to give it to you. And so, see, the image of the Purple Heart was designed by the Institute of Heraldry. Nothing
right.
But we do in the government is copyrighted.
Right.
But it's public domain. I don't, you know, the fact that some organization copyrighted mm-hmm. something that's public domain, that
mm-hmm.
doesn't sound right. And I don't think anybody's challenged it. Okay, now you can take that logo
yeah.
and put it in, you know, the design of the Purple Heart, which
yeah.
is designed by the Institute of Heraldry, and you can put it in a logo.
Yeah,
like
we
they
sent
did.
Them a letter.
Well,
too.
That is copyrighted,
yeah.
but the Medal of the Purple Heart is not. And you can't, I guarantee you can't, whatever they call it, is own the term Purple Heart. Because you know, that means anybody who writes about something, says a guy one received the
mm-hmm.
Purple Heart, you don't control that.
Well, no, they don't control that. They control it
yeah.
for fundraising purposes.
Well, the letter
only,
you
which,
sent me implies that
yeah.
that was they accusing them of it, that you're using
yeah.
a term that's copyrighted. You
yeah.
know,
well, it is copyrighted for fundraising.
Right.
Yeah, for fundraising, they've got that. But the problem is, as you know, when Congress establishes these veterans organizations, you know,
right.
Look, nobody, when I was in the Army, I didn't feel like I had to go trademark, you know, my company logo or my company, you know, name or mascot or anything like that because, you know, we're in the Army. You know, I mean, it's like there's certain protections. And those same protections should apply to those, especially the congressionally chartered VSOs. What you've got here is you've got a group, and it's not just us. I mean, look, it's not just the military or the Purple Heart. It's the Purple Heart Riders, Purple Heart Homes. They're all getting these messages from these folks that are saying, hey, look, you know, you need to cease and desist. They all need to rise
it
up
rings
and
wrong.
Challenge
I think
them.
They're,
yeah.
I think they're trying to scare you. I
yeah,
think you
well,
need,
they,
you know,
yeah.
I think you need a lawyer who can look into it and
yeah,
say,
this is
bullshit. And
everybody's
they're just
got
trying
a lawyer,
to bluff
yeah.
you. Yeah. You, they're
yeah.
just trying to bluff you. And it,
then,
because
that's,
when
that's
I read that
answer.
Letter, when he said it's been upheld by two courts, I want
yeah.
to know the details of that because I don't think they have a leg to stand on.
Well, that, look, it
because
was
it's
held
public
up
domain.
In court because in a federal court.
What was, what was held up?
That they
you
own,
know what?
They
the
own.
Thing is, they don't give you any specifics. For example,
what,
it was
well,
upheld.
I know
what?
Because we were that because
you,
we were that, the ones. Yeah, we were the ones
right.
that they sued. They sued the military
Wait.
Or the Purple Heart. Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell me about that. What did they sue you on?
They sued us over using the word Purple Heart because they own it for fundraising purposes. And because we weren't getting permission from them, which they're, let's just point it out, they are a,
Let
they
me
are
ask
a
you
private
that.
Organization.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
And
so,
you guys lost? You
yeah,
guys
we went
lost?
To court. Yeah, we
Who
went
was
to court.
Your lawyer?
The judge. Well, yeah, you know, look.
Who was your lawyer?
Well, we had an attorney, a law firm out of
let
Texas.
Let me tell you something. So
yeah.
so the Redskins, the Washington Redskins,
yeah,
does not have a they do not have a trademark on their image because they're using the term Redskins. You guys had a bad lawyer. You guys
Yeah.
Sued.
Yeah, well, we know that.
Okay.
Yeah, we know that. Yeah, we lost we
right.
lost that in about 50K, you know, trying to fight this thing and it you know, the problem with it is it really came down to the judge. And the judge, you know, just sided.
Well, there's an appellate court. There's an appellate court.
Yeah, we
court.
Went there. We
you
appealed. We appealed it, and we lost. We yeah. lost the appeal.
You guys had
yeah.
it bad. You guys had it bad. You just need to close down the organization. Fuck all the feds, okay? Right?
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's the thing is you can't close it down because it's a congressionally chartered Veteran Service Organization, it says that it
Wait,
will
if
exist
it's congressionally
in perpetuity.
Chartered, then why? How come you can't use the name?
Well, exactly. We've been around since. So the organization, the Military of the Purple Heart, has been around since 1932.
You got a bad lawyer. You guys really?
Oh Lord, yeah. There's
lawyer.
No doubt about
You're
that. We know that.
Chartered, and you lost
yeah.
a court case.
Well, you know who knows. You know, I mean, you got to be careful. You know, with what you say, but you know, who knows what shady deals go on
behind.
Wait,
how do I have to be careful about what I say?
No, I'm talking about me. I mean, as far as, you know, talking
okay.
about some of this
all
stuff.
Right,
but,
all right, okay. Well, you're the one that brought this story up.
And, no, it's a real story. And then now they're going after the Purple Heart Riders, which is a motorcycle organization that,
yeah.
you know, and they're basically
well,
just.
You know what? You know what I'm going to say? Go after motorcyclists.
Yeah,
okay?
That's what I tell them. Go after them, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to say, okay, let me know how they feel about it. Oh,
well,
and try to take everything. No. Go after the motorcyclists and try
yeah.
to take away their charter,
yeah.
try to take away everything, and see what they do to you.
Yeah, well, they
Pick
don't.
On someone
well,
who isn't going to lie down.
And what if everybody really knew the group that runs this organization? I mean, they're really wormy people, you know. I mean, they really are. Some of them are Purple Heart recipients. Some of them are not.
Yeah.
The ones that are,
well,
you know, they've essentially
expose them. Then.
Oh yeah, that
expose
was listen.
Them.
Listen, I've got an appointment to be on Fox and Friends to talk about this very thing.
Okay.
And, you know, I've been on there before.
Whoa,
I'm on there again.
Good. Yeah.
And.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people are shocked. They're like, how in the hell
yeah.
do you trademark a military medal with the image of George Washington on it? What the hell is these people thinking?
Something that was designed by the Institute of Heraldry. And
yeah.
the name Purple Heart belongs to the Army. So what you're saying mm-hmm. is the Army cannot even use that image, nor can it use the term.
For fundraising.
By what you're saying.
If they were fundraising. And see,
no,
and this
for,
is where
no,
the Army.
No, not for fundraising.
Yeah, no. That's the only thing
the
that they go after people on. No, that's the only thing that.
But it doesn't
so
matter.
You,
I would embarrass them yeah. by the fact, like, yeah, but anyway, go for it. Go
no,
for
no, no,
no.
Here's what I'm saying. Here's So what they did was is you trademark and wordmark for different reasons. You know, like for
yeah.
this reason, it's we own the words Purple Heart. You know, for fundraising. So if anybody goes out, and I'm telling you, Wounded Warriors and all these other groups,
yeah.
Purple Heart Homes, and these people, you know, they do good things, you know, for veterans.
Right,
and
right.
What's really sickening is that here you've got a group that has a D-minus rating, you know, on the scale
well, expose
for
them. Okay. All right.
Oh,
all
God,
right.
Yeah,
so that's
that way,
no,
yeah.
the issue. All right. So the issue here, not the copywriter, is that an organization
yeah.
is exploiting the name and the image of the
yes.
medal and to make money, profiteer
yeah.
off of it
yeah.
and prevent any
yes.
other organization that is trying to do something for the veterans.
Yeah, unless
and preventing
you,
them
unless
from being
you
able
get
to
their
do it.
Permission.
So what is the name of this organization?
Yeah. It's called the Purple Heart Foundation. And the
it's on that paperwork.
It's not
just foundation, it was SF, something else.
Yeah,
something
it's the Purple Heart Service Foundation, yeah.
Service
and
Foundation.
The,
okay,
yeah.
wait, no. So for our listeners out there, you've got your audience.
Yeah.
What do you want
oh,
them
yeah,
to do?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We got the. Well, what we really need to do is we need to call our congressman.
Okay,
you
there
need
you go.
To call. You need to call your congressman to say that we need to have a law that essentially says this, and it's a damn shame we got to do it.
Yeah, yeah,
but
that makes sense.
We got to have a law that says that no one can trademark or wordmark a medal, a military decoration, or the wording for any purposes. I mean, they had to protect the Medal of Honor a few years back because there were profiteers doing the same damn thing with the Medal of Honor, and they did a good job with the Medal of Honor, but they forgot the Purple Heart.
Wait, would you just tell me what you just said about the Purple Heart again?
So basically, repeat
what you want people to either write or call their congressman and say.
Let me try to. So basically, what we need is we need for constituents to contact their congressman, their senator's office, and ask them to, number one, investigate, find out what's going on with the trademarking of the Purple Heart wording and the image, and then to ask their congressman to write a bill or to, you know, we've already submitted a resolution. The resolution says, is to prevent the copyrighting of any military. And we said any because, look, it was done for the Medal of Honor. It wasn't done for everything else. So it's not just about the Purple Heart. Look, it's going to happen with Gold Star mothers. The Gold Star that is a military award that is given to the family. So if someone goes in and decides.
Actually, it's not. No, James, it's not.
The government gives it to them.
No, it's not. They may give it to them now.
Yeah, they give it to them.
That's not what it was. It was a flag. It started in World War One. It was not a flag, it's a banner. People would hang them in their windows.
The blue star
was for every family member that was serving in the military.
I'm talking about the emblem. I'm talking about the emblem.
I'm not familiar with that.
So
it goes back to a banner. It was a commercial. Believe it or not.
Yeah, you're right. And so what the Army did was is they issued two different Gold Star. One is for those killed in an accident, and then the other's for those that are killed in combat, and it has a purple. So basically, if someone decided to trademark or wordmark, and the Office of Heraldry, you know, has rules about doing that, and they tell you.
Here's the funny thing, though. This whole Blue Star, Gold Star thing was a commercial enterprise anyway.
Yes, the Army picked up on it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that one is going to that would be a hard one to defeat because the Army never came up with, the military never came up with it. Somebody got the idea of making money by selling.
Yeah, but I don't want to get caught up in that
minutia. Your window.
Yeah, I don't want to get caught up in the minutia of that, Rich. I want to.
What I want to say is this: stick to the medals. Stick to the medals.
The military
is something designed by the government, by the Institute of Heraldry.
What we want is we want a law that is created that prevents any organization, that's including our organization. You know, we shouldn't be able to trademark the Purple Heart or the wording or the image. And I shouldn't be able, as the military or the Purple Heart, say, you guys at Purple Heart Riders, you guys at Purple Heart Homes, you shouldn't be able to use the word Purple Heart. As long as you're legally established and you're helping veterans, and you're, we believe it's public domain as well. Which is why that, you know, why in the hell would you have to go trademark something that you earned, especially? So everybody in our organization earned a Purple Heart. And they're very, very salty because now, you know, they can't go to Walmart and sit out there with a jug that says donate to the Military Order of the Purple Heart, because once they use the word Purple Heart and it's related to any kind of fundraising, they will put their lawyers on you. That's just, and they're watching. They're watching down to the to the finite levels, and you know, because they won two court cases. They won one over, and it was over the wording, and then they won the other one when we appealed you know, because you're right. We had bad attorneys. There's just no doubt about it. And, but they won that as well. And it was like, it's unconscionable. It's very difficult for anybody that's earned that medal, especially to sit and think, wow, you know, how in the world did this private company come in and take this image and now they're profiteering? Their CEO makes $220,000 a year, you know?
Okay, wait a minute. Let's talk hypocrisy now.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're going to accuse him, the pot accusing the kettle of being black. How much are you making as the president of the Military Order of the Purple Heart? Be honest.
Zero.
Yeah.
Not a damn penny.
What? You're doing that for nothing?
That's right. Yeah, not a penny. Not a penny. But I can be sued. I can be sued for it too. I can be sued. I would have to fight. I would have to go to court, get my own attorney. You know, our organization is built on trust and honor and integrity. And I don't know what the hell these guys are coming from. I really don't. I've never seen a group like that. Now I've seen some vicious, sharky people, you know, in corporate America. I know what that is. But the most vicious and sharkiest ones, they have their limits. They will have their bounds that they will not cross. These guys have no limits. It's like, we don't give a shit that you're raising money for dying kids and everything. We don't care. You're going to pay us. And that's their image. That's their attitude, man. Well, you read the letter. You know how they said it. I mean, it wasn't nice.
Right.
I think you
stated your case.
Yeah.
So for the how many people listened to us, 930,000?
Usually, yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, folks. Just this is a worthy if you may not think your voice counts for much, but contact them. You know, if 130,000 mm-hmm. people, or the extra 100,000 that listen to us during the week, you know, mm-hmm. contact their congressman. One or two of them may actually get the message and do something.
Yeah.
And some of the, like, my congressman, Democrat, mm-hmm. Elaine Laura, mm-hmm. You know, the thing is, in our area, it's whether it's Democrat or Republican, we elect veterans. And so she's big on veteran affairs. And so she may get that message. The aide may go, you know what, because she may have said, if there's anything veteran issue, let me see it personally. Okay. So write your congressman. They may be like that. And they'll go, hey,
let me see this.
No, that's BS. Yeah, this shouldn't happen. Okay.
Oh yeah. And you know, that is one of those call to action things. And again, it's not just,
right.
You know, and here's the problem with, I call out some of my fellow national veteran service officer commanders. Maybe that's why that they think I'm a prick, but you know, they don't say anything, man. They have these great big budgets and they have these huge staff, not all of them, but most of them do, but you don't see them. You know what I mean? They come out, you know, for parade purposes only. And when you got an issue like this, every damn one of them need to be standing in Washington, D.C. saying, hey, you shouldn't be able to trademark any medal or award or decoration. I don't even – the good conduct medal should be off limits. You know what I mean? Because what if – and then this is a big serious thing here. What if you decide to do a fundraising thing where you display the medals with the names of what they are and you say – we are educating the public, but we're also taking up donations. That is a fundraising event, and those suckers will come after you for that. And you have a federal judge in D.C. that upheld every damn thing that they said. You know, whether it be bad attorneys or what, The point
got
is,
it, got it, James, got yeah. it. So I think the solution is everybody, you know, out there, please contact your congressman, your representative.
It's a dishonorable thing. Now, the next thing on the veterans piece is toxic exposure, you know, and then we're going to go into talk a little bit about politics and the Ukraine situation after that, but toxic exposure. And you know, Rich, my dad died at 52, ate up with Agent Orange cancer. 2.5-3 years ago, my uncle died of Agent Orange cancer. And, you know, obviously I've had friends that have been really sick, some friends that have died from cancer from Desert Storm, and some that have been real sick, and some of them that are, you know, in really bad way right now. From both Desert Storm and Operation Iraqi Freedom. And it's troublesome because, you know, there was a Senate bill that came out, Senate Bill 4551 or something. I'd have to look at the number. But where they list 15 presumptive conditions. Problem is they tied it to a time period that says, you know, we will cover you as long as you do it within 10 years, okay? Now, they say, well, there's some ways to deal with it. There's some ways. You know, I'm like, it doesn't matter how you cut it. You have totally cut out the Desert Storm folks with this new toxic exposure bill. You've totally cut out your Vietnam folks, you know, with the new toxic exposure bill because they've – you know, both of those groups have been back longer than 10 years. And there is some, you know, some wording that allows them to be cared for. But the point that I'm making is why do we have to put so much bureaucracy in simply upholding the promise that Abraham Lincoln made to care for him that has borne the battle and for his widow and his orphan? And right now, you know, that is not being done with this bill. You have essentially got a whole group that's been cut out. You've got presumptive conditions that are no longer, you know, going to be looked at. And for me, I don't understand who's making these drug deals in Washington, D.C. But I know some of the lobbyists that are there that work for these veteran service organizations. And, you know, they say, oh, we're working so hard. We're working so hard. And they do. They're all over. They walk up and down D.C. I don't say that they don't work. But it's like, how in the hell do you settle for leaving out half of the people on an issue as serious as toxic exposure? If you would have watched my father, how he died, or my uncle, how he died. I watched this, okay? My father more so than my uncle. But this is a man that could take a 20-pound sledgehammer and could sling it with one freaking hand and could bust a cinder block with it and do it consistently over and over again. He would carry my kids, his grandkids, on their stomachs and hold them up with one arm, you know, like a pizza, like he'd carry a pizza. And I watched him in April, within 2 weeks of going into the VA Medical Center, go to the point to where he couldn't even stand on his own. And towards the end, we had to help him hold his head up just so he could look at people to try to speak. I mean, he could barely speak towards the end. And it was very devastating. It was very destructive. And, you know, when my dad died on September the 2nd, it was at, you know, 7:34 in the morning in 2000.
What year?
2000, yeah.
Hmm.
He was 52 years old. And he called me at 12:30 at night, the night before he died. I think he knew that he was going to die because he called me to tell me that he loved me. And it was very hard to understand him. But he also called me and expressed he was worried about me and wanted me to keep fighting, you know, because, you know, him and I, before he got so sick and could hardly speak, He says, you make sure you're going to the VA, get your checkups. He says, because you don't want to be here where I'm at. He said, you know, he said, I just went to work. He said, I go to the VA every now and then. He said, I just kind of ignore things. And the next thing you know, I walk in here, I'm at stage 4 cancer and I'm going to die. And he knew that, you know, he knew that going into this. And when my uncle, you know, went in through this, it took years for him to die. And he went through a process where he lost half his lung, then he lost one lung, then he lost half his other lung, and then he eventually lost, you know, he was down to like almost a quarter of a lung usage. And he died, you know. I mean, eventually you die. You know, if you can't get a lung transplant, you're going to die. And he did. And I did go see him before he died. And, you know, as veterans, you know, we have things that certain things that we say. He was an aviation guy in Vietnam. And he actually, his brother was killed in action in Vietnam. And they pulled him out of Vietnam after his brother was killed. But, you know, I can remember, you know, saluting him as he laid in that bed, and I said, I'll see you on the LZ. And we knew what, we all know what that means, you know. It's devastating to see this. And for me, I look at this and I wonder how do you decide which ones that you leave out on something important like medical care, on taking care of the families.
Let me explain it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So for all those people out there who are advocating for universal health care, what you're going to experience, all you got to do is go look at the history of the Veterans Affairs. And that is, it's about money. And there's, you know, the VA had to basically decide who was going, they were going to let die. And they, now the time frame you're talking about, your father dying of Agent mm-hmm. Orange related illnesses, they mm-hmm. are already covered. By that time, they had already, enough Vietnam vets have died of Agent Orange. It isn't that they came to the realization, now they could afford it. But they are going to ration health care. There's only so much money. You can't take care of everybody. Look, they cheated me out of my GI Bill. It's about money.
Sure.
They found ways, you know, they're going to look at ways where they, and see, I back in the 80s, no, the 90s, it was post, got now the Army, and I was working with the American Legion and the VFW, mostly the American Legion. It was a lot. It was a couple Vietnam vets had gotten very active in it, and they recruited me in because I came in during the Vietnam War, so I was a member of the Vietnam Veterans of America, and that was a big issue. You know, getting, I mean, they were showing me the statistics of the number of people, not only veterans dying of Agent Orange-related illnesses, but their children were also inheriting those, okay? So by the time I got hired, which is right at the turn of the century, they were already accepting, like, okay, for example, if you have diabetes, they're going, that's a victim of Agent Orange. They have a whole list. So what you're saying is, doesn't match with the Vietnam vet. If you walk in there and you're a Vietnam vet and you got any of these symptoms, they're going to give you disability because of that, because they're going to tie it to Agent Orange. Now, the Desert Storm vet, that may be different because, yes, there was a big debate over whether there was a toxic exposure. People were coming up, you know, the Desert Storm symptoms, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, I've got to get checked.
Yeah. So there was this, I remember, you know, these guys coming back and they were having these really unusual symptoms. So they couldn't call it anything else but the Desert Storm symptoms. And there's debate about how what did these guys get exposed to? Because they burned they forced the Iraqis to turn in their chemicals, and they burned chemical munitions or whatever. And they're thinking like, okay, so were these guys downwind of that or whatever? I don't know if they ever resolved it. But for the Vietnam vets, they're covered. They're covered to what you're talking about.
But that new bill probably
excludes the Desert Storm vets.
Yeah, well, it's because of the time hack that they got on this thing. You know, I mean, it's like,
but then
you know,
again,
10 years.
Did they ever prove that Vietnam vets were even exposed to any toxic agents? Desert Storm, excuse me. Desert Storm. Yeah, we know the Vietnam vets are covered, but I think the issue with the Desert Storm vets is what you're exposed to.
Depleted uranium was a big one, yeah. Well, depleted uranium
The other one, right.
You know, it's like, you know, this whole burn pit thing, you know, I mean, they threw everything in the burn pits, which, you know, you were over in Iraq, you've seen some of that stuff, where they just burn stuff. And, you know, obviously that puts off some, you know,
James, when I got to Iraq, we had porta potties. By that time, everywhere there was porta potties. Okay,
yeah.
We didn't have the field latrine with the 55 gallon drum. Okay.
Well, you know, we had that in.
I know you were there early. You were there in the second year. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and then of course I was there during Desert Storm, you know, that's
right,
where I remember
right.
where we, you know, we had to burn our own crap, you know, so.
Right.
Which was, that's kind of interesting. But you know, I don't know. I just know that people have gotten sick. So when we think of this toxic exposure bill, you know, it's really hot. And what's aggravating, here's the thing that aggravates me is, you know, it's like, well, it's a start. And it's like, you know, here's my thoughts on this. The next war that we fight, you know, we'll just do the best that we can do. It's a start, you know. Or how many soldiers, me as the company commander of a unit, am I authorized to leave behind? Can I, if I bring 50% in, is that okay? Will that be acceptable? And I don't think, here's the problem that I have. We're not holding the politicians and the government that sends us to war to the same standards that they hold us to. And our standards are that, you know, we don't accept defeat. We don't, you know, accept mediocre, half-stepping.
Right.
You know, you don't take half the objective. You take the whole damn objective. And it's just, to me, I can't understand. And when I talk to people about it, it's, you know, Rich, they look at me like I'm speaking Chinese, and I don't know, am I that far off?
First of all, you've been talking about this, so what do you want? You know, we resolved it with the Purple Heart thing. What do you want us to do? Okay,
well,
it's a shit sandwich. What do you want to do? Eat it or, you know, shoot the cook?
Well, you don't want to eat the sandwich, but you know, again, you know, it goes back to constituents, people, you know, speaking up. Now, I'm not saying you don't have to go
wait,
burn
wait, wait,
down
no.
places
What are you
and
asking
stuff.
Them to do? What are you asking
well,
them to do on this toxic
ask them,
issue?
Ask them to ensure that we have a clean bill that is going to take care of all the demographics, all the people, and all the areas.
All right, I already told you. The Vietnam vets are covered. The Vietnam vets are covered. Okay.
Well, and some of them
Agent
will argue
Orange
that
is
with
recognized.
You.
Huh?
Some of them will argue, because believe me, I got a lot of Vietnam vets that are, you know, raising hell about this toxic exposure thing.
Okay, what you're saying is, the new bill may have changed the way they're treated. Because I'm telling you, in working with my friends who are Vietnam vets, now if you have anyone like diabetes, sleep apnea, whatever, and you were in Vietnam, they're going to say you were exposed to Agent Orange and you qualify for disability. So you're telling me that's changed.
Yeah.
No, you're telling me that's
changed.
I don't know.
The bill just passed in the Senate. It's still got to pass in the House.
Okay.
And what's interesting is that you have the House bill has 25 presumptives where the Senate bill only has 15. So it's like that's a clear sign that, you know, they don't communicate. And it's like,
it always works that way. That's how the government works. So the House has a very complicated bill. The Senate comes up with a simpler bill, and then they send it back to the House to approve. So basically, you got more members in the House, and they want to add everything they can to it. They send it to the Senate, and they send it, chop it down to something they like, and they send it back to the House to say, if you want this bill passed, this is how it's going to be passed. And if they don't want it passed, then they go, it doesn't pass. That's how it works.
Yeah. Well, and obviously, you know, it's for me, the most upsetting part of it is the willingness to just accept the bone that we're thrown. I mean, throw us a bone, but throw us a bone with some meat on it. You know what I mean? There's just, you know, don't just throw us a bone to give us the bone, because in many cases,
no, James, all right, yeah, that's okay, but
yeah,
historically speaking, we always treat our vets like they're expendable. Okay, we need them when we're at war,
we feel that
way. Crisis,
yeah.
And then when the war's over, we don't need them anymore. We don't take care of them. That is a tragedy.
Yeah.
However, we live in a time today where if somebody says they were a vet, everybody wants to say thank you for the service. Well,
yeah.
You know, I feel guilt whenever anyone says that. I'm like, I feel bad about it because I didn't serve for anything, any noble reason. I served because I was having a great time. Okay, I lived in Oklahoma. I wanted to see the world. I wanted to get away. I joined the Army. I wanted to go live a life of adventure. I had a blast. I did all the fun things you could think of in the Army.
Oh, you did. So, you did. You had a great time.
But the point is, so you're like thanking me for having a fun time? Seriously.
Well, yeah.
No, I don't deserve your thanks. But translate that into helping out all those other people, the broken soldiers, okay? So that's what I say. So, yeah, if you're going to say, all right, we need Father Michael here, and that is, you know, love without acts is meaningless. So you're going to sit there and going, I want to thank you for their service. You know, that's supposed to be an act of love. It's not. You got to do something, okay? I mean, if it takes just calling your congressman or writing your senator and say, fix this bill and take care of our veterans.
Look, it's saying thank you is the easy way out. It's like telling somebody on Facebook, I'll pray for you, you know what I mean?
But it is appreciated. No.
It is
appreciated. Now, and I have these students will sit there and say hi to me, thank me, and stuff like that. It is appreciated. So don't belittle that. But it like,
I'm not belittling.
It's
not the
thanking
answer.
A veteran is enough, okay? If you really care about the veteran, do something to make sure they're taken care of.
Politically speaking, you know, I can tell you that it's very shocking for me, you know, because, look, you know me, Rich. I mean, I really put emphasis on honor. Your honor is all you have. And, you know, if I tell somebody that I'm going to do something, I will do that. You know what I mean? Like standing up for the vets, speaking up for them. You know, when we were in war, I mean, you know how I conducted myself in combat. It was an honor thing. It was about, you know, not surrendering any ground to the enemy. And I watch other veterans that are propelled into positions of national leadership level, okay, and they are becoming freaking bureaucrats instead of still being warriors. And that's what I don't understand, is why in the hell are we electing people like that, that, you know, they may have served or they may have not served, but in most cases, you know, especially for veteran service organizations, if you serve, then, you know what I mean, maintain that honor. You know, don't just sell out. You know, don't settle. Call it settling for half-stepping, and you just can't settle for half-stepping. I mean, it's just, you know, for me, I don't see, you know, it's either we're going to honor the commitment that was made to us by President Lincoln and has supposedly been upheld for years and years and years, and it hasn't, but, or we're not, you know, and if we're not, then get ready to start drafting, because, you know, if you think that we're going to continue to have an all-volunteer force, you know, as we continuously, you know, destroy, you know, people's bodies and their minds and their souls, you know, for serving, and then we're not taking care of them when they come back, you know, these kids are watching that. You know, I hear more kids now that are, and you probably hear it too, that are in their teens or whatever, they're like, you know, I would never join the military. I would never join the military. Well, why is that? It's just crazy. I mean, you know, it's like these, you know, the suicide and something happens to them when they go, and they always change, and, you know, and what do they see? They see the negative, always the damn negative. You know, they don't see the positive role models that are veterans out there, and they see so much negative. Because we're not taking care of the vets.
I'm going to challenge you on that. I'm going to challenge you on that. All right. Less than 30% of the American youth even qualify for military service.
Right.
And those serving on active duty represent less than 1% of this nation. And I will tell you right now, 90% of them serve because not all that other propaganda. They serve because they had a father, mother, uncle, grandfather, aunt, whatever, who served in the military. They served because of a close personal relative who served in the military. And I'm going to tell you right now. All right. So when this I was commanding a rifle company in 7th ID, 7th Infantry Division at Fort Ord, California, and the Nicaraguans across the border in to Honduras, we got called back we were in the training, we got out in the field, we got called back, and also there was the first coup attempt in Panama. So we actually had two crises that we had to be ready to respond to. So as we're coming out of the field and buses and we're rolling in through the gate, right? The San Jose VFW, all right, San Jose, California, is if you want a place that is lost in time, it was San Jose. That's where all the hippies went to. You know, it was like the 60s back there. They're probably in their 50s, maybe 60s by that time. So here, and the VFW was filled with all these John Kerry type veterans, okay? So they came down, and as we're driving back through the gate, we had all these protesters out there with signs, and the one I remember to this day was, don't let what happened to us happen to you. So we roll in, they drop us off, we go into our barracks, So my soldiers saw that. So I asked them. I walked around and I asked them. It's like, so, guys, I got to do an immediate thermometer check on morale. Like, all right, because we were DRB too. We were on, you know, if they sent two battalions downrange, we were the second battalion to go. So we were DRB too, you know, rapid deployment force. So I'm walking around talking to my guys, like, you saw the stuff. They're going, you know what their attitude was? And like, so you saw the propaganda. Don't let what happened to Vietnam vets happen to you. And they're going like, well, we want to go to war to find out what all the talk about. You know, that's the thing is like, it worked in reverse. These guys, you know, I didn't have any Vietnam vets, but I worked with Vietnam vets, but I had none. I did. My uncle was a truck driver in the Vietnam War. That's right. Not my uncle, one of my cousins. But I didn't know what to ask him, your truck driver. But the thing was, you know, most people had that relative as a Vietnam vet, wouldn't talk about it. And that encouraged a lot of their young men to want to, and women to go off to war because you wanted to be able to come back and talk to them about it. And I'll tell you, the conversations I had with my stepdad after I joined the Army was a lot different than the conversations I had before. And I remember because I don't know if it's true or not, but he claims that he landed on Omaha Beach on D-Day. And he went over, went under over his head in the water, dropped his rifle, ditched his web gear, and swam into shore. Just come out of basic training. And I remember looking at him going, but my drill sergeant told me you never let drop your weapon. And the look he had on his face, I have to believe he was, because he was an ordnance guy. He was a wrecker operator. That's why I really have, matching up, being on D-Day, and his discharge doesn't have the arrowhead, okay? So I'm sitting there, like, the look he had on his face, like, you really don't understand. So he told me, he said, well, there was plenty of rifles on the beach when I got there.
Yeah, absolutely.
The thing is, I didn't get it, but here it is so all those Vietnam, the whiners, the John Kerry's that are out there going, oh, woe is me, I'm a victim, and we got shit off this. Like, all right, but it's really the guy that's silent, doesn't want to talk about it. So his nephew or son wants to go to war so he can come back and then talk to him. Because because then, all of a sudden these guys were opening up. And they were telling me about the harsh reality of combat that they never told me about before I joined the Army. Well, let me ask you. Mm-hmm. Was your father alive after you came back from Iraq, from Desert Storm?
Yes, Desert Storm, yes, he was, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. Did your conversations change?
Yes, they did.
Okay, I'm going to tell you right now, like my nephew, Daniel, okay? And so I have the privilege of, he was on the Lincoln during Desert Storm, not Desert Storm, Iraqi Freedom, and they did a one-year deployment. When he came back, we went over, picked him up, took him to dinner and stuff like that, and because he was going to go and leave and go visit his dad and stuff. And as we were talking at dinner, now you're a veteran. And, of course, everybody said, that and 75 cents will get you a cup of coffee. I said, no. For everybody else, yeah. But I'm telling you right now, to another veteran, no. Everything has changed. And I said, I warned him. I said, when you go back and visit your dad, you're no longer his son. You are a fellow combat veteran, and your relationship will change. So after he returned from vacation, his leave, I picked him up and I talked to him. I said, so let me ask you. He said, did your relationship with your dad change? He said, yeah. He was taking me to the VFW, the American Legion, introducing me as his son, the combat vet. He said, but the funniest part of it, no longer telling his Daniel about how great he was as a Marine. Now he was admitting all the fuck-ups he did. His father was becoming more honest about his stories. so anyway, you know, once if you're the son, daughter, whatever of a veteran, and you've gone down range, you come back, it's a different relationship with your parent.
Oh, sure.
Do you agree?
Yeah, it is.
Yes.
Yeah,
just,
it is.
Just like mine, my stepdad, my uncles, all my friends, after just joining the Army after I came back. All right.
Mm-hmm.
They all had, you know, they were now telling me about combat. Because
mm-hmm.
I wanted to go. Oh, yeah, you think it's going to be fun? Wait till you find yourself right face down in a rice paddy and someone shooting at you. And then the Korean War vet. Oh, you think combat's fun? Wait till you find yourself face down in a frozen rice paddy. Someone shooting at you. The World War II. Till you find yourself face down on a beach somewhere and somebody's shooting at you. Then I finally realized, you know what combat's like? It's being face down making love to Mother Earth and somebody shooting at you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's definitely a lot of chaos too there. I mean, it's
yes, it is.
I think you know, so for me, you know, as we're talking about this the veterans issues and politics, it runs hand in hand. You know, you just don't see enough action, and it's just for me, it's disappointing. You know, literally, so. You know, people need to stop cutting deals. That's just where I'm at with this. I'm all about, you know, working together, making things happen. But there are some things that are non-negotiable. Anything related to protecting our children and anything related to taking care of our veterans, you know, I don't think that we should be negotiating. And I'm going to just say this, and I know it's going to piss some people off, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyways. You have illegal aliens, immigrants, whatever the hell you want to call them, that are sneaking across the border and they're getting better health care and getting their teeth fixed more so than our veterans. And that I have a big problem with. I have a problem with that. I find it to be repulsive. I find it to be disgusting. Now, I'm all about giving people an opportunity to legally immigrate to America and to do the right thing and to come here to be a productive citizen.
No, James, I'm offended by that. I'm offended by that.
Well, that's okay.
Because Trump separated the parents from their children. They deserve $500,000. Do you understand? Trump separated the parents from their children. They deserve $500,000. The veterans who are separated from their children for a year to go to combat don't deserve anything. Do you understand me?
Yeah, I know you're being facetious there. I know you're being.
I know. Okay.
But you know,
but that's
look.
What it sounds like.
Well,
I'm
not.
Like.
Yeah, I know.
You come
I know,
to
but
this
I'm
country illegally, and you get you're violating our law. You get separated from your kids. And you expect $500,000 when a vet who is willing to sacrifice his life, and you know I'm going like, he's like he's going to miss that. You know, he's got a 1-year-old child that's growing up. He's not going to hear that first word they say or see that child walk.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay? All right. Oh, so we should treat the illegal, the criminal. The criminal.
Yeah.
Okay, illegal veterans. Goddamn criminals.
The criminals
okay?
in prison.
And you're
going to
treat them better and give them $500,000.
Yeah.
And shit on a fucking veteran.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the MO. And that is the MO of this or of the political landscape now. And guess what? We have fellow veterans that are serving in positions supposed to be helping, you know, and I'm doing my finger thing here on both sides, giving it quotations, helping their fellow veterans, and some of them are up there cutting a deal to make their life more comfortable, you know, because I'm going to tell you something. I go up on Capitol Hill and all the time, you know, fighting for this or talking about that or, you know, doing the same damn thing that these lobbyists are doing, and they are making $200,000, $100,000, whatever they're making.
Wait, James, wait a minute, hold it. You're telling me you are the president of Vets for Vets Leadership, and you're trying to encourage veterans to run for Congress and trying to support those that are, and you're telling me that they're selling out.
Not all, no, they're not. They're not all of them are selling out. No, we want the ones that will not sell out. That's
the ones
we want. Here's what I'm saying.
Okay.
You have lobbyists that are working for the Veteran Service Organizations of America. If they were doing their job, then we wouldn't have these half-baked bills with their signatures of support on it. We wouldn't have it. You know, because they sign off and say, yeah, we support it. Great, we support it. You know, you wouldn't sign off on it if you're really looking out for all the veterans. You see what I'm saying? That's the problem. The problem is it's not the veterans that are running for office. You know, we've got 10 damn good candidates right now that are running, and I'm going to do my very best to help all 10 of them get elected. Now, if they do, they don't owe me nothing. You know what they owe? They owe this country. They uphold their oath. They do something. These drug deals, and I call them drug deals because that's exactly what it is. You know, these political drug deals that are being made are destroying the foundation of our country. They really are. And it's, you know, well, we won't push so hard on this if you give us that. And I've sat in and listened to this, you know, this back and forth banter, and I'm told that, well, that's just the way politics is. No, that's not the way politics is. You know, the way politics is you present a resolution, you know, you hope that it gets written into a bill and you continue to push for it. Obviously, you know, we've all been and you know, where things had to be changed or adjusted, but nothing gets changed or adjusted that leaves out an entire group of veterans. And that's what I see is going on. And that's the reason why you got 22 suicides a day. It's not changed. You got still got homeless veterans. They're all over the damn place. What you really have, not just homeless veterans, we have more veterans living in poverty than, I mean, it's probably one out of every five is living in absolute poverty. They may not be homeless, but they're living in a home that's substandard. They got a leaky roof. They got problems. You know, they got mold issues or they got whatever. You know, they can't afford to keep their electricity on. It gets turned off all the time.
All right, James. All right.
That's what I'm saying, you know.
So you're talking about the veterans represent 7% of our population. And
roughly,
to be especially a recent veteran, you represent the top 30% of this nation. I mean, when you look at the recruiters, when the Army looks at recruiting potential and they say only less than 30% of the American youth qualify for military service, it's because they're physically unfit. They have criminal issues, crime and stuff like that. And the schools have failed them. They're not smart enough to join the Army. Are they smart enough to, you know, what else are they? If you're not smart enough to be a cook in the Army, what the hell are you qualified to do? Okay. And you have moral issues and you have physical issues. Okay. What are you qualified to do? So when
the issue, the number one issue is the majority of them have been over medicated, and when they get on all these ADHD
and we had a guy talk about that. What, he was on like 20? It's like, so they give him medication to fix this. It has side effects, so they give him more medication to address the side effects, which cause side effects. They got to give him more medicine on. That's a different problem right there. That's talking about, you know, let's look at the fact that these doctors get a kickback for, I don't know, I've heard this, they get, you know, money from the pharmaceutical industry for prescribing their medicine.
If they weren't, there wouldn't be so many damn pharmaceutical sales reps in the doctor's office. It's like every doctor's office I go into, there's at least three pharmaceutical reps that show up, you know, in the waiting room or in and out, dropping something off. So, you know, obviously, there's something to, you know, there's probably some relevance to that. But you know, that's part of the reason why your youth cannot get in the military, and they're out of, there's no physical fitness that's taught to the level like we had when we were in school. We had to walk everywhere, run everywhere, you know. You know, we played sports. We played hard, man. And nowadays, it's not like that. You know, people are afraid of getting hurt. People are afraid of getting sued. They're afraid of getting COVID. I mean, every damn time you turn around, you know, I was supposed to go to Houston this week. Well, you know, my daughter comes home from school. Well, she got exposed to somebody that had COVID. Okay, well, I'm vaccinated. You know. Well, now, no, sir, Mr. McCormick, now the health department requires you to get a test. You know, you've been exposed to COVID. Now, we're not telling you what to do, but, you know, you're not supposed to fly. You're not supposed to travel until you get a negative test. You know, and it's like you have to wait 72 hours after you had the exposure. And it's just utter bullshit the way it goes on.
Let me interject. Okay, let me put in a little levity in this.
All right.
Go on YouTube and type in George Carlin immunities. I think that will get you. He has a sketch that is hilarious, okay? And he talks about, you know, he's almost predicting the pandemic. And he you know, he says, like, he talks about growing up in New Jersey, whatever, swimming in the Hudson River, and all the toxins and the waste that is dumped in there. And he's saying, we swam in shit. He said, they came out with the polio vaccine or whatever it was. He was talking about other, but he was talking about immunities. You have to be exposed to all these diseases stuff to develop immunity. The real, he said, the counter to a great pandemic is immunity.
Yeah.
And he said, we swam in shit. He jokes about it. He goes, yo, they'd sue each other. We swam in shit. We were immune to everything. We never got sick from anything. And I laughed about it. And I remember, you know, my mother confessed, you know, admitted this, because I was a premature baby, but only by a month. But the first child was premature by 2 months. She lost it. So she was so paranoid about losing me. And finally, the doctor told her, let him eat dirt. And he said, he's got to build his immunities up. When we grew, look, when you and I grew up, if someone got measles, go and get exposed to measles. You'll get the measles, and then you'll be immune from it, okay? We grew up in a time where it's like, go get sick and you'll get healthier. Eat dirt, you'll get healthier. And now we have a generation growing up, you got to wash them all the time. And what I've heard from the military is that one of the big problems we have is the soldiers coming in today are allergic to everything. They have allergies
out of
the world.
And I don't understand that.
They have
no
immunities. They do not have the natural immunities you and I had, because we ate dirt. We played in the dirt.
Yeah.
We didn't wash. Hell, yeah. lucky to change our shorts.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that, you know, we've kind of, you know, beat that down a little bit on the, you know, obviously the, you know, we are still falling short on caring for our veterans. Right. You know, you mentioned the Vets for Vet Leadership and, you know, that organization, you know, and again, I want you to sit on the panel, but that organization, is designed to really not only, you know, identify, you know, veteran candidates, but it's really more so to educate the American people and the voters, you know, on just really study who the hell you're voting for. Because if you continue to vote for the same people over and over again, you know, it's you know, you're going to get the same thing. It's like, you know, the people that do the same thing that expect a different result, that's the definition of insanity, right? And if we continuously vote, you know, basically party line principles, you know, then you're going to keep getting the same old nonsense that you get. You know, there's a danger in one party having all the power. There is a danger in that. We're damn sure seeing it now. You know,
let me explain this. Okay.
Yeah.
The Democrats and the Republicans, see, the people who really decide who is going to control Congress and be in the White House are the swing voters, the independents. They don't have any alternate choice other than the two parties because they're not voting for any third or fourth party candidate because they don't believe they have a chance to win. Mm-hmm. So we are caught in a routine. So the Democrats candidate, and they're going to vote for it regardless, but they only represent 40%. Come on. You know, they talk about Biden's polling has dropped to 40% or whatever, 39% or whatever. I'm like, that's, you know, for everybody else going like, if you're going to pump gas into your car, how can you think Biden's doing a good job? No, because they're loyal Democrats. Because they believe that Republicans are evil. The Republicans believe the Democrats are evil. Okay? So it really comes down to the swing voters.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're the ones who actually elect. I'm going to tell you this, all right? So basically each party, the two parties, they pick the candidates and the swing voters elect them. That's what we're stuck with. But I'm going to seriously start looking at the third-party candidates, the swing, the independent candidates. If you want to break this gridlock, all this, you know, because now the two parties no longer compromise on anything. They were so
nothing. Yeah,
yeah, I know. And the thing is, it's my way. That's all it is. It's my way. There is absolutely no compromise. If we want to break this up, we've got to start voting for third-party candidates or independence.
Yeah, interesting. You know, I am of the belief that most of the folks that, you know, that lean more towards a fiscally, you know, conservative mindset, you know, are better for the country. I'm just going to be very honest with you. You know,
wait,
as far as we've had this discussion.
No, you just endorsed every GOP candidate. When, if I haven't forgotten, not even a year ago, you were endorsing every Democratic candidate.
No, I didn't endorse any candidate. But what I did say is that we have to have a level of civility and the ability to be able to communicate. The problem that we have is that we're gridlocked. You know, it's either you're either, you know, look, there are Democrats that are fiscally conservative. There are. Joe Manchin is one of them in West Virginia. You know, he's probably, you know, done more to, you know, help prevent or stave off some of the damage that's being done to this country. Or, You know, I mean, if you could imagine if he would have just went lockstep with everything that his party was telling him to do, we wouldn't be looking at a 7.5%, consumer price increase. We would be looking at more like 17% consumer price index, and a whole lot of BS that would have floated out, to programs that would be helping illegal immigrants. I guess is that the terminology they use now? Illegal aliens, illegal immigrants. I don't know. More money gets shoved into these little pet projects like crime, prison reform and all this other stuff that's out there. And I believe, that you try to help a person as best as you can. But, I know a guy that's been to jail 7 damn times. Now, if he didn't learn anything after the 3rd time, I'm going to tell you he's probably not going to get any better if he's continuously going to jail, especially for the same type of things, trafficking or, drugs or, whatever, fentanyl, whatever the hell else that they've been involved in. And so, being fiscally conservative means that, you're not going to spend the money on those kind of programs. If we're going to go in debt, let's go in debt, giving the damn money to the, to the groups that need it, our children and our veterans. And I'm telling you, our senior citizens too. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Ames, I'm going to challenge you on that. I'm like, yeah, I would put those at the top, okay? And look, the Bible mm-hmm. says, who did the Bible say you're supposed to help? Widows and orphans. Yeah. And because I worked as a mentally handicapped, I'm going to say we need government program. Well, we need to help those who help themselves. And here's an issue. So the Democratic Party is for helping everybody, all right? The Republican Party is.
I don't think.
We believe. I saw a survey one time.
Yeah.
Which group of people, liberals or conservatives, do you think give the most to charity?
Conservatives.
Which group of people do you think gives the most to charity? Liberals
conservatives? Conservatives do.
Why would you say that? The liberals are the ones who are constantly advocating.
give the money to the poor.
Give the money to. Why would you say the conservatives are the ones who are given the most charity?
Because the conservatives.
Because the statistics show it's true.
It's true.
But
it
why?
Is true.
The statistics will show it's true, but why?
Well, because the majority of them truly have, a charitable heart. Now, the hard...
No, James, you're wrong. The liberals have a charitable heart. Ask AOC. She has a charitable heart.
Ask her. I've not seen any
checks moral compass. No, facts don't matter when you know you're morally right.
Yeah, well, I've not seen any money coming from any of those.
Here's the issue. Here's the issue.
They're not helping her combat
wounded veterans. Wait a couple years after she's been in Congress for like 8-10 years and how much money. She is mad. Let's see if she becomes a Bernie Sanders with 3 mansions. Okay, now.
I hope so.
Yeah, all right. My point is,
they go in and they make that.
The
kind of
Democrats believe that they believe in charity from the government.
Yeah.
Which means the government picks who gets the money. And they are, and because of the liberals do not want to give any money to, well, I'm not going to say all of them, but I'm going to say they don't want to give money to anything religious-based, unless you're Muslim. Now, the
conservatives, some freakish religion
they believe
jerks
that
off
charity comes from the heart. And it should be the individual who deserves gets their money, not the government.
Yeah,
that's the big difference.
But look,
liberals want the government to decide who gets the charity, and conservatives
think those are socialists.
They should, and that's why the conservatives give more charity.
Yeah, And that's a socialist mindset. You know, when we talked about the whole thing about socialism and,
right,
you know, all that. Look, right. I'm a charitable person. I'm a, you know, what I would call magnanimous, you know what I mean, where we give, you know, what we can give. But good Lord, you know, I mean, you know, I want to be – I'll tell you why I think conservatives give more to charity, because they want to be able to choose where they put their money. That's why.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they want to choose who wants to. Yeah, absolutely.
They don't want to give it to the government and have the government give
it to
something they don't believe in.
Yeah, well, yeah.
In other words, here's the thing is like, if you allow, this is what the liberals have a problem with. If you allow everybody to contribute to what they think is important, it won't be this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know exactly what they think is important. I mean, all you have to do is just
the majority of the citizens don't think is important.
Yeah, it's
that's why they think the government should control charity.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, you know. I mean, it's look, it's obscene that you get elected into political office and you go in and you come out and you're a multimillionaire. I mean, you know, it just, you didn't have a pot to piss in.
All right. No, let me put it this way. Look, having retired as a civil servant, I had combined military and civil service, I had 37 years. Anybody who becomes a billionaire off of working for the government is a
You got to be a crook. You got to be
you
a crook.
You got to. There's no
damn
way.
Crook, yeah.
look
you know,
at the
insider trading, whatever.
A congressman or a senator makes, and you tell me how they become a billionaire.
It's called insider trading, man. And if you and I did what they did,
Pelosi.
We would go
that's
to jail.
Nancy Pelosi right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, she is. She admits it. And she admits it, and she says that it's fair. And I should be able
no,
to.
No, she doesn't admit it. But
yeah,
she doesn't see any problems, but she doesn't admit it. She doesn't see any problems with it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, hey, look, here's the deal. I hope that they do something righteous, but they won't. You know what I mean? It's, you know, everything, when you allow the government to divvy out that money, you know, let's just say that if they could create a law, they would do it. They would create a law that would say all charitable donations must first go to the government, and then we will distribute them as we see fit. You know, there's people that would love for that to happen because they believe that it's going to go to something, you know, that they believe in, whatever it is, you know, LGBTQ, whatever. You know, hey, I don't have anything against any of these groups of people, you know, at all. But I'm saying that when you get charity, it should come from people that are charitable. Don't just
no, James. You're a racist. You're a racist.
A bigot.
You're a racist.
And a racist.
You
yeah.
don't think an illegal immigrant, a Hispanic, you don't think a Hispanic deserves $500,000 for being separating for their child for illegally crossing our border. You're a racist.
I know. I'm a bigot. I'm a racist. I know. You know, it's I know. I'm a racist. You know, but
okay.
Look.
No.
See,
you have got I'm going to tell you. If you're a Hispanic, you have got to come across this border like everybody else does. Marry a dumb gringo like my wife did.
Well, you know, and even that's
okay.
difficult.
And
she's
probably listened to the show, and I'm going to get chewed out for that.
Good. I hope she takes a roller pin to you, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah,
but,
no, she has better ways to torture me, okay?
But I think, you know, I think that, you know, charity has got to come from the heart. It really does. And it's.
Right.
It does.
Right. Okay, but hold it. Jesus said, when he said you have to take care of the widows and orphans, I believe he's saying you've got to take care of those who can't take care of themselves.
And I'm going to tell you something.
And I'm an advocate for the mentally handicapped. Okay, so
absolutely.
I'm going to include the mentally
absolutely.
Handicapped in the widows and
I got
orphans.
A cousin like that. Yeah, absolutely.
Right, okay.
And I'm going to tell you, I didn't like the way that the kids were, put in the jails or whatever, but the shit's been done for years.
And it's
their parents can't.
Now.
It is. And I don't like it. I do not like it.
On the border.
But look, here's the thing, Rich. I don't like that regardless of who's doing it. You know, the difference is that nobody's down there filming it right now. And they need to get their ass down there and film it because it's just as bad now. And you still got kids that are in there dying in custody.
No, it's not, James. It's not. You want to know what the difference? It's not any worse because Biden's in command. He's the president, and Trump's not. If Trump was the president, the media would be all over the border. But Biden's the president.
Whatever.
It's not that bad.
Well, maybe not.
I
don't think
anyway,
it's true,
not
though.
That bad.
I don't think it's true, but you know, I know you're being facetious with me because the thing is,
I know.
But you know, look, don't mistreat children. You know, you need to get your ass kicked if you mistreat a child. I mean, I'm just telling you right now.
Right.
I support there's a group out there that's going after these freaking sex traffickers for kids, and I support them. I support
right.
them with money. I support them with whatever they need. You know what I mean? And it feels good every time they bust one of those idiots that are trying to traffic a child. But what is surprising is that it's going on. It's not going on in other countries. It's going on here in America in cities like Cleveland and Chicago and New York City. There are American kids that are abducted, kidnapped, or worse, kids of, you know, drug addicts that, you know, they don't give a shit about their kids. And, you know, look, I know CPS is overwhelmed with many cases.
Okay.
Yeah.
We talk about reparations for, you know, we got people who have never been slaves wanting reparations from people who have never owned slaves. But slavery exists in this country right now.
Damn right it does. Damn right it does.
Slavery.
And we need to crush it.
People who have never been a slave want money from people who have never owned a slave and are going to ignore slavery exists in this country. And when you tell me what I'm talking about.
What are you talking about? You're talking about the child sex trafficking.
You know, for people going like, no. Nobody's picking cotton and, you know, and all that.
Slavery exists
in this country. It's human trafficking.
Yes,
that includes,
that's what I'm saying.
That includes prostitution, and that includes slave labor, you know, like Chinese being brought in to work in sweatshops, you know.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I am all for hanging pimps. I really am. I am all for the death penalty for all pimps. I really am. And people think.
You want to know something? All right. If you do, all right, for the citizens out there who don't believe there's slavery in this country, ask anybody who works for the government that every year they have to take a course on human trafficking. And we are educated on the indicators of human trafficking.
Yes.
It exists.
Yeah, I mean, yes.
Slavery exists in this country right now.
Most of them are the children of these drug addicted parents who the government, you know, for whatever reason. I mean, it's like I'm not for the government having the overreach on everything, but if you're going to have a child protective service agency, you know, I've seen those agencies used to lean on people that probably shouldn't lose their kids. And then they totally ignore the crackhead or the meth head that's not able to take care of their children, and they end up becoming, you know, sold as slaves. And that's exactly what happens. They need their fix. It's like they got a six-year-old daughter. They're going to give that six-year-old daughter or six-year-old son to that pimp who's going to turn them into a prostitute, you know. And that shit has got to end. That right there, if you want to get on the bad side of me, then we have somebody that promotes that shit come around me and see what happens. You know, I mean, I'm just telling you that right there is the worst kind of they should get the death penalty for that. I mean, seriously, man, they shouldn't just be put in prison and be a burden to the taxpayers of America. They should receive the death penalty. And I don't mean like 7, 8, 10 years from now. I'm talking 7, 8, 10 weeks.
Wrong.
Okay.
No. I'm going to tell you, James. I'm going to tell you right now. I am opposed to the death penalty, except for mass killers. All right. The reason is because, all right, two reasons. Because DNA has proved that a number of people who are on death row did not commit crimes. We should never have a death penalty situation that is going to sentence someone to death who could possibly be innocent. But the other thing is, I would rather see someone rot in their execution.
Do you know what that costs us?
Right away.
Do you know what that cost us per day, per prisoner?
I got it. I understand. But if
and we got to take care of it.
Then I'm going to tell you right now, if there's a possibility that an innocent person might possibly be executed, I'm opposed to it. However,
if I ever
killed someone and was on death row, I would want to be executed as quickly as possible rather than sit in a closet-sized cell for the rest of your life.
That get a read a lot. That right. You like to read. I mean, you'd be able to read all the
I
books
do,
you
but,
want to read.
But I got to get up and walk around, okay? I'm going to tell you. No, I actually thought about that. I'm going like, okay, mentally I could read. I could do all this stuff. When they sent me to Haiti, after the earthquake.
Right.
And I thought about that. I said, okay, this is close to prison. Okay, seriously, I was locked on a compound. We had a small area that we could roam around.
Sounds like a nice place.
And it was driving me crazy. Seriously, I'm thinking about, I can't do this. I could not do this for the rest of my life. And
but
I
look,
used to think about this. I said, if you took somebody, it's all relative. So when you're in prison and you're going, okay, but I used to have free reign, I could do this, and now I can't, it's hell.
Mm-hmm.
But if this is all you've known, if you've never been able to roam outside a 8x12 room, that's
mm-hmm.
all you know, you would be comfortable in it. The fact that you had four, but the thing was, in Haiti, man, I'm telling you, the compound we were in was driving me crazy, and
mm-hmm.
I could not wait to get out of there, just go to the embassy, or just to leave the compound. So, if I ever got sent to prison, kill me as soon as you can.
But now the
right.
human trafficking.
That's what I want. You're going to put me out of my misery. So for me, I'm like, for those people who, I'm going to tell you, for a sinner, you got a problem with death.
Yeah.
For me,
I can
fix things up, and I know, like, as soon as you kill me, I'm going to be in a much better place than I am now.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a sinner, you need to cling to life as long as you can, because where you're going is a far worse.
Well, we're all sinners saved by grace.
Right.
If you decide to be
saved.
I'm the
saved by grace, okay?
Now,
I do not lead a good life. I do not lead a good life. Just ask Araceli.
7 minutes. Seven minutes left.
But God has forgiven me.
Yeah, 7 minutes left, Rich.
All right. You want to talk about – all right, let me sum up Ukraine real
quick. Is Russia going to invade?
Okay.
Is Russia going to invade the Ukraine? Your opinion.
It could or
Russia
could not,
invade?
But let me explain this. Just put it all into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
One, Russia has no reason to invade Ukraine. They don't need Ukraine as a satellite. state mm-hmm. like they did in the Soviet Union. The problem is Russia does not need any enemies on its border. If you look at the history of Europe,
mm-hmm.
understand the term buffer states. So all those countries, Lithuania, Latvia, Poland, Ukraine, are buffer states between Russia and Germany. Okay? These are neutral. So Putin is not trying to recreate. I don't believe he's trying to recreate this Soviet empire. All he wants is a secure Russia. He does not want to invade Ukraine because he knows he's going to have a guerrilla war. Ukraine has applied for position in NATO. Russia does not want a country the size of Ukraine a member of NATO. So in other words, remember, NATO is an attack on one country is an attack on all. So when the Taliban attacked us in 9/11 in New York and we went to war with the Taliban in Afghanistan, guess what? NATO responded. And all these NATO countries were involved in the war in Afghanistan, and then mm-hmm. Biden pulled out without warning about it. Okay. So
right. Well, we don't have enough time to talk about that
thing.
One, but yeah.
All right. Here's the issue. If you want to know why Russia has amassed all these forces, and mm-hmm. if you really want to understand if they're serious, pay attention to logistics. If they are massing supplies, stockpiling supplies on the border forward, they are serious about invading.
Mm-hmm.
And I read a report that they have been stockpiling blood forward. That's a serious indicator of an offensive operation.
Did
now,
you say blood? Blood?
Blood.
Blood. Yeah.
That's one of the indicators. Yeah. So if you look at logistics, you're looking at food and blood. Okay? Class one. And class nine, I can't remember. Yeah. Class eight or class nine is
ammunition
is
pretty important.
Blood.
Yeah,
they already got that. All right, but we really look at the food. Food they're going to like that. But anyway. So so they're stockpiling all that for it. But the thing
mm-hmm.
is, all Putin is really. He's forcing NATO countries to answer this question.
Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to go to war over Ukraine? He doesn't want to invade. He does not want to invade Ukraine. He's wanting to force NATO to answer that question right now.
Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to go to war over Ukraine? And that's
going
to
come,
if, you know, and whatever, that right there is going to sum up all
I've heard
the questions
question.
Or whatever.
Yeah, I've heard
but
that
again,
well, we got, I've heard people ask that question, but.
But that's what
but
it's
yeah.
about.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not willing to
so
go to war over Ukraine, don't admit
yeah.
Ukraine to NATO.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. That's the, it really, you know, and again, I've heard that as well about the, you know, Putin
but that's
is
what it's
a,
about. If you
yeah.
listen to what Putin's been saying, don't admit yeah. Ukraine to NATO.
Mm-hmm.
So he's massed all the forces on the border, with
mm-hmm.
and everything's ready for an invasion. It's imminent.
Yeah.
He's really
well.
Forcing you to ask, are you serious? Are you willing? We are not, the United States is not going to commit troops to the defense of Ukraine. We are sending troops to all the other countries
sure,
of NATO.
That border you can
but
bring.
Not
yeah,
Ukraine.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
if the issue
most
comes
of our
down
stuff
is,
with Poland,
are
yeah.
we willing to go to war over Ukraine?
Well, time will tell. You know, time
no,
will tell.
No, no, the answer is, no, time will tell. No, that answer has got to be answered right away.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
how
yeah. seriously, we only got a minute. We got
the,
a minute.
The indicators
and a half.
Are that Russia is ready to invade right now.
Yeah. You know,
okay.
I mean, that's,
anyway,
ultimately
that's my
their decision.
That, yeah, if you understand that, you understand the issue with Ukraine.
Well, folks, we got a minute left, and we're rolling down to the last minute of Continue Mission. We're kind of, you know, I mean, it's been an interesting conversation. We've covered a lot of ground here, and then we finished up with, you know, a brief overview of the Ukraine. But I do think, Rich, that next week we should really discuss, you know, this whole Ukrainian situation. There might be a war going on by then, but also,
hey,
like
look,
what you were talking
I'll
about,
you,
the
if there's no war
Afghanistan.
Going on, there's not going to be a war, and we need to move on to something else.
Yeah.
Because we'll have
yeah.
Father Pacello on, and we can talk
yeah.
about, you know,
33
the thing
seconds.
Is, look
30
here
seconds.
It is, you, me, and Father Michael.
25
what he
seconds.
Brings, he contributes to this is
yeah.
the theological side. The
20 seconds.
Side. Yeah,
19,
you and I
18.
Can talk about, you know, the pros and cons of
yeah.
secular, you know, the
all right.
everything else.
Gotta say goodbye,
he'll,
Rich. We got
he'll
10
write,
seconds.
He'll provide the spiritual side of it.
God bless everybody. We'll catch you next week on Continue Mission. Have a good night.